It's Christmas in July, a ginormous July. The savings right here at Oak Ridge Nissan, right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. I'm John Wilkerson, Vince Ferrara, pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams, and it's guaranteed to be Max Pan the entire afternoon.
Always when there's anything involving Scott Gropp. That's what we got. And, of course, Tennessee's number one volume Nissan dealer. They continue to just move cars in and out. And, yeah, that's what you get when you have that kind of inventory and that kind of sales. And the staff here at Oak Ridge Nissan is you get Max Pan.
Maximum pandemonium is what that is, the shortened version of. So it's all right there. And we, will, of course, are going to catch up with Scott throughout the course of today's program. But saving so big, like Christmas in July, Altima starting at $18,888, new Versa starting at $12,888, no payments until 2022, next year. No white elephants at Oak Ridge Nissan. Get up to $8,000 for your trade. And don't make the $10,000 mistake over a short 10-minute drive. Vince Ferrara, folks should make the drive and save
thousands.
That's right. Don't ever think he's not a hype man, ladies and gentlemen. Vince Ferrara. Woo! But we have a lot coming your way today. Look forward to bringing you comments. We have so much left over from SEC Media Days. It's like the day after Thanksgiving. I mean, you've got everything full. You've even got some stuff that's outside if it's cold enough because you don't have room in the fridge or freezer.
That's right. Lots of containers. You come out of this with more containers than you went in.
You're going to take some of this home, you know. That's what you're left with.
Right.
But we also have our regular Friday guest, Jesse Smithy of 5starpreps.com will join us a little bit later this hour. We will have Steve Hamer join us for Hamer Time, the Vol for Life, an all-around great guy. That'll be in hour number four. And because he called the Bucks way back when, Al Brown's going to join us at 4:05 to talk some hoops as we put the wraps on the NBA season, as well as touch on a couple of different other basketball or hoops-related topics.
That's right. I forgot. Al Brown has been driving that Bucks train. Boy, it's good to have a nickname Bucks these days, isn't it, John?
Yes, it is. Very good. And so the Bucks won't stop at 4:05 as we'll get to heap praise upon them and Al Brown for his prediction, his prognostication.
Too bad it can't help the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I don't know what can.
That's a good point.
But we have all that and more. We'll also have comments from Tennessee baseball coach Tony Vitello, Tennessee football coach Josh Heupel. We'll even throw in a smattering of remarks from Kirby Smart. As Vince, while Media Days ended yesterday, there was news today as we got to see the preseason predictions and the awards and all SEC teams handed out. And it starts, why don't we start with the standings? No surprise at all. Georgia is picked to win the Eastern Division as the Bulldogs get 124, I believe, out of 134 first place votes. Florida's picked second. The Gators received 7 first place votes. They won the East last year. Kentucky, bit of a surprise from my vantage point. They come in third with 2 first-place votes in the division. Missouri picked 4th, Tennessee 5th with 362 points, South Carolina 6th, the Gamecocks garneted a first-place vote, and then Vanderbilt 7th. Your thoughts on the predicted order of finish by the media of the Eastern Division?
Garneted neither should have applied. How about removal of ability to vote?
And there's probably a couple, two, three on the west side that you would also say, sure, whatever.
Yeah, and there are. But Kentucky even got a vote for SEC champion.
Yeah.
And South Carolina, not only that person voted him to win the East, voted him to win the SEC outright.
Woohoo!
And they got as many votes as Florida to win the SEC.
That's a great point.
Stop it.
That's right. And Texas A&M, Kentucky, and South Carolina, and Ole Miss, as many first-place votes, or I should say championship votes,
right,
as did the Aggies, who are picked second in the Western Division, Florida picked second in the East. But your thoughts, how would you have stacked? My ballot, if I was voting, would have been Vanderbilt 7th, South Carolina 6th. I've got Kentucky penciled in 5th, Tennessee 4th, Missouri 3rd, Florida 2nd, Georgia 1st.
I have it exactly the way it is here. And
oh, look at you, teacher's pet.
Ken and I were talking about it on the drive back yesterday. This is exactly.
It must have been a long drive.
Florida for who? You mean for both. I know. You don't need to answer that. So, yeah, I have it Georgia, Florida, Kentucky, Missouri. Actually, no, that's not right because I have Missouri slight edge over Kentucky based on the quarterback position.
Right.
I think very similar teams in their potential, very easier schedule, not very easier schedule than some others. So I would have had Missouri 3, Kentucky 4, and then Tennessee 5, South Carolina 6, Vanderbilt 7. I think Tennessee is closer to 3 and 4 than 6 in South Carolina. So I think South Carolina lacks a lot of talent. And in the West.
Haven't done those yet.
Okay. Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, actually, I'll say news and notes brought to you by our good friends at Image Matters, technology you need, people you trust. Vince, you've been trusting Image Matters for years and years and years.
Yeah, continue to do so. And whatever the project is, a lot of it involving sports, scorebooks for baseball, different projects for me, and then stuff for my family. Everything has just been top notch. And it's they have the technology, they have the quality, the service, the total package there at Image Matters.
Western Division, Alabama gets the West nod, shocker, as well as the championship nod. Only four people cast votes for teams other than Alabama, and it was one vote, as we highlighted, in each for the four that were in the West that received a championship vote. A&M received a first-place vote, picked second. LSU, a first-place vote, picked third. Ole Miss, a first-place vote, picked fourth. Then Auburn, Arkansas received a first-place vote. The Razorbacks did their pick six. Mississippi State last. And if I'm not mistaken, yep, that's exactly how I had the West stacked. I had State 7, Arkansas 6, Auburn 5th, Ole Miss 4, LSU 3, Texas A&M 2, Alabama 1. What say you, Vince Ferraro?
Yeah, all I was going to say was just big picture without giving it away is it's aligned the same way. Mine is like the SEC's, Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, Ole Miss, Auburn, Arkansas, Mississippi State. I think Arkansas has more talent overall. I think they have more playmakers than Mississippi State. I haven't really understood the, I don't know, respect or love affair for Mississippi State. I think if I'm going to find a theory, it's they had some pretty good defensive stats last year while the offense struggled, and many will probably assume that Mike Leach is going to figure out the offense, and then just thinking to themselves, well, if the defense is pretty good and he figures out the offense, they're going to be pretty good. I don't know if I trust Rodgers at quarterback, and I just don't think they are deep enough or good enough, lost really good running back. They didn't run the ball even when they had a running back. So
I'm just thinking ball.
Exactly. So I think that's the way it is. LSU, I think it's Alabama, then A&M, and then LSU, Ole Miss, and Auburn, I think, will be pretty close there in the middle, and you get another group there with Arkansas, Mississippi State at the bottom.
And we already touched on it, the championship votes. Alabama getting 84 championship votes, Georgia 45. If you had to give it odds and or a percentage chance, what chance would you give Georgia and Kirby Smart, for that matter, to as the first Saban assistant, former Saban assistant, to knock him off in the SEC title game if they make it as predicted?
The way those votes, or I guess the points in the voting, or those are number of votes, or
yeah, that's 45 okay. Championship votes.
Okay, that's pretty close to 2-1, 84 to 45. I would that's where I would set odds. I think. Where Alabama has a 2-1 chance to win it. But it's not like it's an absolute lock. Alabama doesn't win it every year. But Georgia is so close in terms of talent that if things break their way, Alabama has key injuries, or you know, they have a unexpected three-loss year or something like that, I think Georgia's a team to jump in there. I agree with the gap from them to others. I'm surprised that Florida didn't get a few more of these votes if you're looking for somebody different.
I agree.
I mean, the LSU isn't in there at all with any SEC championship picks. And a lot of people view Florida not that far behind Georgia. So if Florida does hop Georgia in the East, then it's just a matter of winning the SEC championship game. And that's not easy. But now you're in position to at least win it. have Florida have just one vote to me. If you're looking to do something different, that's where you would go for the SEC title to me, not super long shots. You just don't see a whole lot of that in the SEC.
Yeah, I do think that for Florida, what would I think hedge the bets of many would be you lose the two outstanding Kyles they had, Trask and Pitts, yeah. Not necessarily in that order, but you had what was just an unbelievable offense that really put a scare. I thought the game was over in the first two quarters, but Florida was able to really push Alabama in the SEC championship game last year. Really impressed with how that went. And then we all know that so many opted out of playing in the bowl game for the Gators that Trask was stuck essentially throwing to me and you.
That's right. And then there was a shoe throwing that was as important as anything for Florida.
Florida led the SEC in shoe tosses.
That's right. And look, Texas A&M, to me, I would have A&M as the third best team in the league if we're doing a full ranking. And they're not very well represented with just one vote.
True.
Now, that's tougher because you're having to hop Alabama, so mm-hmm. I get that a little bit. But, man, again, if you're trying to do something different, that's a direction I would go. And I'd even have LSU ahead of Florida. I think where some might want to go Florida's way is because it is the East versus having to hop Alabama. But that's kind of the way I'd rank the whole league is Alabama 1, Georgia 2, Texas A&M 3, LSU 4, Florida 5. And then you keep moving after that into the middle group. But it's crazy that it basically just came down to two teams for the title.
Yeah, and I do think that, I mean, one, we have seen Alabama be able to survive injury, but we know it's been a program that at times has had an injury bug, losing some incredibly talented starters, but they also have some incredibly talented reserves that have been able to step in and take the place or have incredibly highly regarded recruits and prospects that were able to step in and just be able to survive by being thrown in the deep end. But, I mean, injury could be something that could impact Alabama's ride to the top, return to the top, I should say, after winning it all last year. And you also have an unproven quarterback. You also have a new offensive coordinator. And while he's very familiar with the college game, it's not as though he's a fish out of water. You just never know when you have one transition that stacks on another transition that stacks on another transition. So I don't think it's out of the question to think that somebody could supplant Alabama as the top team in the West and another team besides the Crimson Tide win the SEC. But I also think that if all things remain equal and everybody stays with the same level of health, Alabama's the team to beat, but they aren't invincible.
I agree with that. And, you know, Alabama loses 8 starters on offense.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about all the receivers, too.
Yeah.
And the best running back, I think, in college football.
Absolutely. And one of the favorites for the Rookie of the Year now in the NFL. But, yeah, that you lose 8, but then you have Bryce Young, a 5-star quarterback, stepping in at wide receiver. You
still and perhaps a millionaire.
That's right. Ungodly amounts of money through sponsorship. But so you're right. Those guys get to the way they do it is they get some playing time, sample playing time, and then so that way it's not an absolute throw them into the ocean, and then it's just their role is elevated. On defense, they return 8 starters. 6 of them were first-team selections. I know we'll get to that, but that just shows you how good they are on defense. So you have some time to figure out one of the best offenses in the country last year with some younger guys that are still 4- and 5-star talents.
Yeah, we will get to that, but as we are approaching our first break, do want to say that there were 3 Tennessee Volunteers that received all-conference nods, and that was Cade Mays, who had 6 starts at right guard, 1 at right tackle. He gets first-team recognition on the offensive line. Second-team honors go to punter Paxton Brooks, coming off a season where he averaged 42.9 yards per kick. And then Alante Taylor, I thought of Tennessee's 2 outstanding representatives from the player ranks, Valus Jones Jr. and Alante Taylor, did a great job on Tuesday, but Taylor earns third-team honors.
Yeah, those guys don't surprise me. Maybe you could have looked at a Valus Jones Jr. Mm-hmm. in terms of a return specialist, perhaps. But, I mean, other than that, I think the other guys are outstanding and deserved. And you know, I think Paxton Brooks, there's more there that he can do. I think that's a little bit to the lack of returning depth at punter, but he still had some very effective punts. I just think his distance can really help Tennessee this year in managing some of that field position. But all those guys, I think, were worthy where they were selected.
We have a lot coming your way today. And one of the things, Vince, that if folks happen to miss the incredible coverage that came their way Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from Hoover, Alabama, there is quite the cache of collected audio, blogs, you name it, all at 991thesportsanimal.com.
That's right. In total, 134 podcasts. That's just the audio,
yes,
folks. All of it is in one spot, and you can get to it on the central page. You can also get to it via the audio tab. There's an SEC Media Days link there. And then also, in addition to that, 73 website posts, 51 videos, which is coach and two players from each team, video from one room. We didn't do every room, but video from one room. Plus, we did recaps, myself, Jimmy Himes, Eric Kane. Every day there's a wrap-up. Also have a time capsule of the 4 days of Media Days. There's a video of that, which is pretty cool. All of that on our YouTube channel, and then also at 991thesportsanimal.com on that central page. And then we haven't put up every team yet, but Tennessee is there, and four other teams are there, where we compiled all of the audio and videos embedded it into one post for that team. Tennessee has eighteen pieces of content, video and audio, on one page. So if you go to the website, first thing you'll see right there, click on that Tennessee helmet, and you can get all the Tennessee audio and video on one stop. You can sift through. There's a lot of different versions of it. It's not the same thing saying the same thing. There's a local media with Heupel, Jones, and Taylor. There's one-on-ones with Jimmy and Eric Kane. There's main room. There's radio room, / electronic room. There's a lot of different settings of it, audio and video. So take some time on it. Tremendous amount of football content to get you ready for the season. They say different things in those settings. So fun stuff. Really hope you guys will check that out. 991thesportsanimal.com. Any other team you're interested in, what pages for all of them, so you can get everything easily in one spot, which you can still kind of do on our central page, which will stay up there through next week.
But if you were looking for the Tennessee treasure trove,
yep,
991thesportsanimal.com.
You'll see the Tennessee helmet right in front of you when you go there. It's also on the Vols tab. You can get to it easily there as well.
A couple of other things. First of all, the Smokies last night, they fell behind early against the Trash Pandas, could not rally, so it was Rocket City getting the 6-3 win. Game 4 of their series is tonight, 7:35 is the first pitch. Coverage starts at 7:20 or around 7:15 right here on The Sports Animal. And let's see, obviously driving the conversation this week, Oklahoma and Texas could be officially on their way to the Southeastern Conference. That news could be finalized in a matter of weeks, according to reports. As we've talked about, the money is big, as the Sooners and Longhorns would each owe the Big 12 $76 million based on future earnings as part of their broadcast partnership. But they would also expect, if indeed welcomed with open arms to the Southeastern Conference, to be cashing much bigger checks than that.
Right. And Jimmy and I have talked about it, and Will asked me about it from Media Days, and the more I think about it, the more I think this is going to happen, John. And it's not only the money, but it's the power. It's the ability to have that SEC brand and enhance recruiting and everything else that comes with it. So I think this is where we're going. The grant of rights portion of those TV contracts, it looks like Texas and Oklahoma are looking to get or opt out of those, which would open the door for them to join the SEC. To me, they're not doing those things unless they know already that the door is wide open for them to come into the SEC. This seems like something that behind closed doors quietly has been set up. I don't think you go through that process if the SEC was like, I appreciate your interest, but we're good. Thanks.
And then just to get your reaction to this, what do you think it'll be like next year when, as the All-Star break approaches, it's like, well, there are the White Sox in first place in the AL Central, but they're being pushed by the Cleveland Guardians.
I mean, my reaction was, didn't overwhelm me.
106 years of being known as the Indians will end with this season. Guardians, which is in reference to the bridge that leads you over the Cuyahoga River into downtown Cleveland. They have the Guardians of Traffic that are on that bridge. That's where Guardians come from. It is a salute to the city, but I am like you. It has not warmed. I've not warmed with my reaction to the change.
If you're going to salute your city, what is Cleveland more known for? You know, a list of things, but one of them, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yep.
You could do something to that effect. You could do something that's...
They've had the Rockers before.
That's true. Is that John Rocker or just the Rockers?
Just the Rockers.
you wouldn't want to pay homage to him.
No.
but my point is there are other things that would connect better, sound better. And when you have nicknames, when you have those names, you want something that is fierce, can be intimidating, something you're really proud of. Not saying Cleveland's not proud of that, but it for a branding standpoint, to get fans to jump on the bandwagon, I think that's a tough draw. Maybe it'll grow on us and their fans, but, man, that just doesn't grab you right out of the gate.
If you had an Arena Football League, I think it's perfect.
Yeah.
If you're an IHL team, outstanding.
There you go.
I just, I'm like you. That kind of just has a other area in terms of professional sports names that you would go with. And again, maybe it just takes time.
Right.
But Guardians is what Cleveland will be known as moving forward. See, I'll say this. I know that there was a lot of pressure for them to change, just as we've seen. But I also think that their situation was far different than the Washington Football Team in the NFL, simply for the fact that they called themselves the Indians in a tip of the cap to and honoring a player of theirs that was an Indian.
Right.
So Sockalexis was the name, Louis Sockalexis, and that's why they were the Cleveland Indians. It was a tribute to him and how good he was and what he meant to the franchise. So it was, to me, far different than what we've seen being protested for years and years in D.C. in the NFL. We head to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, where Vince Ferrar and I get to say hello to Jesse Smithy of 5starpreps.com. Jesse, how are you?
Doing well, guys. How are y'all today?
Doing quite well. And you sound awfully chipper for somebody who, like hundreds of others that shared on social media, got the rejection letter from Augusta when it came to your search for 2022 tickets.
Mm. Well, here's the thing. I think in my journalism career, I think I've spent 51 days covering the Masters, and most people would kill to go down there for one day. So I've been blessed beyond my wildest dreams as times I've been able to go down there. So, and I think the last day that I was down there, Tiger Woods won the team.
Jesse, did we lose you?
Just because they've never been able to experience that, but I've been down there, and so if I get rejected, I can stomach it a little easier.
Listen to Jesse. I think I've been covering it for 51 days.
like total humble brag.
Right.
Total humble brag there.
And not only that, like, it's so exact. Like who's counting?
Yeah,
it's exactly 51 days.
Yeah, so we were packing up around the house once, and I had to bag up all of my master's credentials, and so I remember going through my head like the amount of days that I've been down there. So I've been able to go down there, and that was one of my dreams when I got into sports journalism. So again, been blessed to have seen it, and can't wait for the stories I hear for first timers coming out of Augusta next year.
Well, everybody knows how outstanding you and your team are when it comes to covering prep sports, especially high school football. But if you haven't seen or witnessed Jesse Smithy covering a golf tournament, he's outstanding, just as outstanding, equally outstanding is the phrase I'll go with, in doing that. But can you believe it, Jesse, that we are inside of 4 weeks to the first high school football game?
I can. We've been at it for a while this off season, if you want to call it that, and covering a lot of 7-on-7, and now I've gotten to that point, guys, where I'm tired of seeing 7-on-7. I'm ready for the real thing. I'm ready for scrimmages to start, and that's going to happen around July 29th, July 30th is when we'll see the guys really put on pads and really start to go against other teams. And I always remind people on this show that, we didn't get to have that last year. We didn't get to have scrimmages from with one school going against another. And so it really diminished the product a little bit once the season began in mid to late August. It really took 2 or 3 weeks for teams to really start to look like themselves. And so I'm just looking forward to that, just getting back to scrimmages and really getting an idea of what these teams are going to look like come week one. And so it's crazy to think about it, though, that there's going to be jamborees in just, 3 weeks or so, 3-4 weeks. And so really looking forward to it. We've been rolling out a lot of preview information. We still got so much more to unveil on our site, and it's the fun time of year for us.
Jesse, you know, in college football, when you watch spring games, there can be spring stars, and those guys never see the light of day or, you know, in the real season or just never develop. Is that the case with your experience in watching these, some of the 7-on-7s, even when you get into scrimmage and jamboree time, to where you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt based on some of the performances you see?
Right, yeah. I'm trying to temper my expectations for Catholic quarterback Jared Neal, because he's a freshman. He's still built like a freshman. He's looked extraordinary at times in 7-on-7. I mean, they won a 7-on-7 championship against Powell inside Neyland Stadium, and he's performed well in other 7-on-7s. He's also going to be playing in the most difficult classification in Tennessee high school football, going against the likes of McCauley and Baylor and Brentwood Academy, and Catholic's got a really demanding schedule this year. And so I'm not saying he's not going to be able to perform when the pads go on. I'm just saying I'm trying to temper expectations for him, because he's looked so great at times during 7-on-7. So really, there have been a number of players from various schools that we saw make big-time catches, acrobatic catches. They look good. They pass the eye test in 7-on-7, but we'll really be able to tell if they can withstand the physicality of the game and the speed of the game here in about a week or so.
Jesse, at KFOA Media Day, I remember talking to a bunch of coaches, and several of them, when they got to the schedule, said, "Man, I don't know what idiot made this schedule for us this year."
Yeah.
And I think part of that is some of these schools moving into different regions. What are some, you said the word reminder earlier, remind our listeners some of the most noteworthy changes in regions for some of the area high school teams.
Right. So I think one of the bigger ones is that we've spotlighted a little bit is the transition for a program like South Doyle, who was in the Class 5A state semifinals a year ago and oh so close to going on to play for a state championship. They end up losing, I think, 14-0 against Oak Ridge, but now they move down into 4A, and that's the realm of Elizabethton, who's won back-to-back state championships in 15-0 fashion, and in Greenville before them in 15-0 fashion in 2017 and 2018, and Anderson County is a big power in Class 4A, and so now you throw Anderson or you throw South Doyle in the mix there, and it really strengthens the field in East Tennessee when it comes to Class 4A football. So, and for Anderson County, they're not in a region now with all these Chattanooga teams. They're going against some of the likes of some of the area's best. So it's really going to, I think, improve the schedule quality. And we ranked, I think, 10 or 12 so teams of who's got the toughest schedules in our coverage map. And Anderson County's in there. South Doyle's in there. Catholic, like we mentioned, is in there. So it's really going to improve the quality of play and the quality of product that we get just as lovers of high school football here in East Tennessee this season.
It's always neat when you shine the spotlight on those that deserve it for their incredible performances. Not only was it exciting to see you guys announce the 5-star Preps 2021 baseball team and soccer boys soccer team, but also great at the same time that you got community support to sponsor both.
Right. There are a number of sponsors in the area that popped up and really helped us put out all of our spring sports teams. New Balance Knoxville got in there. Dead End Barbecue got in there. Cedar Bluff Racket, the Royal Industries got in there. elite softball recruiting popped up and helped us put out our all softball team. So it's fun to see them support high school athletics and do that. And putting out those teams is very difficult. We have to talk to a lot of coaches and request a lot of information and do our best to put those out there. So it's a labor of love for sure, and something that usually takes us, I mean, it took us over a month this year to put that out. And so we're glad to finally got those out there. If you don't see them on our homepage, you can go look under the specific sport that you want and find that information. Anytime we recognize these athletes, it's going to be free on our website. So you don't have to be a member to check out who we selected and who we honored this year.
How good, for those that didn't get to see him, was Webb's Ben Penske as the boys soccer player of the year?
Phenomenal. And it was really hard. I mean, to pick a player of the year this year, because you had Sevier County winning a championship for the first time ever. You had the unbelievable story of Austin East winning a state championship this year. But when you look at the body of work of Webb School of Knoxville's boys soccer team, it was unmatched. They went 20-0. They won a private school state championship, which is very, very difficult. And they beat some of the area's teams, all of the elite area teams. And so it was what they were able to achieve and what Ben Penske did to lead that charge. It was just, once we really put it down and mapped it out on paper, I mean, he was the clear-cut winner. And so he's been very appreciative of the recognition. He reached out to us, and even his parents reached out to us and thanked us. So it's remarkable to see what he did this year, and certainly a worthy winner of our five-star preps boys soccer player of the year.
Back to the gridiron, I guess we shouldn't be shocked at all that a Maryville quarterback is on his way to Furman, right?
We should not be, no. But, I mean, if you look back at some of the quarterbacks that Maryville has had, which hasn't been too many since George Quarles left, I think 2016 was his last full season at Maryville. So we've got, three, 4 years since he's been gone. It's not like he's just swooped in and just offered Maryville players left and right. He's been really selective about their needs at Furman and what they want. And so I think it's an even bigger feather in Carson Jones's cap to know that George Quarles just doesn't flippantly throw out offers to Maryville players because he used to coach there. And so when he offers you, it really means something. And I think Carson Jones got that offer on a Friday maybe, and then a couple days later he went ahead and committed. I think he realized the opportunity that he had to not only learn from Quarles' understudy, Derek Hunt, who's now the head coach at Maryville and has led them to state championships, but then you can go on and continue your progression as a quarterback and learn from one of the area's best coaches ever at Furman, with George Quarles, who's the offensive coordinator there. So really kind of neat story there, and a great opportunity for Carson Jones.
Jesse, Jimmy and I asked you last week about Walter Nolan, the potential of him transferring from the western part of the state, ESPN's number one overall rated player that certainly Tennessee is after, the potential of him moving to Knoxville and going to one of the area schools, Powell, Catholic, maybe a Maryville. Heard anything in the last week in terms of that front and where he might land if he moves here?
I have not, but isn't this indicative of where things are going? It's really a trickle-down effect from college football down into the waters of high school football, where in college you have kids leaving, going in through the transfer portal, and there's all kinds of inquiries as to where they might end up. And now we're seeing it trickle down into high school, where it's a public thing now. It's a public inquiry. I see media members tweeting at this kid. We got to remember, he's a high school kid, and we have adult media members just out in the open saying, hey, where are you going to be playing this fall? People want to know. And these kids become high-profile athletes so much sooner and quicker now because of social media. And it almost feels like they're adults, like they've been doing this for years. So there's a lot of intrigue around Walter Nolan, a lot of people that have been talking about him for some 2 to 3 months now. I do know that he's made some visits to a couple schools in Knoxville. I've also heard that he's looking at some of these national academies. So if he shows up here, again, like I think I told Jimmy last week, I'm sure he'll announce it on Twitter first, like these guys do nowadays, and we'll just all kind of adjust afterwards. But I haven't heard any type of clear indicator as to where he might go.
Do you know of, are you aware of any high school kids with any sort of name, image, and likeness deals that they've already been able to strike?
I don't. I see kids here and there say that get some equipment from a manufacturer, whether it's a golfer or a baseball player, but that stuff's been allowed for a while. So it's really hard to decipher if that's something that's happened under the new NIL stuff or something that's already been in place. But I haven't seen an athlete that I cover come out publicly and say, or promote products or anything like that. I have talked to Bernard Childress, the executive director of the TFFAA, about that, and they are concerned. They have spoken with the NFHS about this and kind of what type of plan needs to be in place. It's going to be upon them to handle these situations in a situation-by-situation basis, depending on what the athlete is doing or what's happened with that athlete. So I don't know if they can blanketly police this thing. I think they're going to have to do it as they come, but it's definitely something that's put up a red flag for the TFFAA.
Jesse, there's a boatload of great content at 5starpreps.com. Some of the things, you start looking at some of the underdog teams that could really step up. Rockwood would be a name to throw out there, and you've also got great player profiles on a senior receiver at Central and so much else, but always appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Jesse Smithy of 5starpreps.com joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline, as it is the founder of the feast, Scott Gropp, who joins us now. Scott, how are you?
Oh, well, just peachy, you know.
That's right.
Jingle bells, jingle bells. Oh,
quite the sack full of goodies.
I'm telling you, Christmas in July is happening right here at your number one volume Nissan dealer in the state. In fact, all the Nissan guys were here today, the area general manager and district operation manager, with our new banner. I think they're posting it all over Facebook. Number one dealership in the state of Tennessee. That's been a couple years in a row now, and we're in first place going into mid-year. And so to be number one, you know, you gotta let your sack go.
And you gotta move some wagons.
And on that note, there's not as many sleds as you see sometimes out in the parking lot. You guys are really moving them out.
I'll tell you what, folks. I'll tell you, it's Christmas in July sale. Wholesale to the public. I'm telling you, we are making deals that other dealers just can't or won't do. And as far as the trades, we are loading the wagon. Definitely not worried about the mule going blind, up to $8,000 over Kelley Blue Book. So we can pay it off no matter what they owe. When other dealers say you owe too much, losers, wrong answer. We're doing things, like I said, other dealers just aren't doing.
So if you're just trying to perhaps wind your way here, and we got to see so many different countries represented as they had the we'll just go with the Olympics. If you were over there and you decided, I need to go get a new vehicle today, how long would it take you to get here Japan?
Tokyo to Oak Ridge. We have a winner, 10 minutes. I'm telling you, save thousands of dollars. Make that sleigh ride.
Make the drive. Ginormous July, Christmas in July. Scott, we always appreciate
it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Scott. And we're here right where the Turnpike meets up with Illinois Avenue. Oak Ridge Nissan, hour number two of Sports Talk is next. It starts with Coach Al Brown on 99.1, The Sports Animal.